Austin had the last question, I believe. I get skipped. Dennis, if you're interested in question number one, it's a, I think it's a four-parter. What was the inheritance of the Danites supposed to be, and why hadn't they received their inheritance yet? Where were they living at? Why did they recognize Micaiah's priest? What does their request for him to inquire of God say about their spiritual knowledge and state? Quite a bit there.
This question.
Well, the territory according to Joshua 19:40 through 48, like 14 different cities: Zora, Eshtol, Bershneth, Sheldon, Eglon, Jephthah, Elon, Timnath, the rest of them. That was what it was supposed to be. Basically, they found that some of this land is going to be difficult to conquer, and so they chose to migrate to Bethshan, where they knew the victory would be easier. They'd been given enough territory to meet their needs, if there were, but they failed to trust God to help them achieve that victory. They were kind of going on their own power here, and possessing a lot of territory, so the Amorites forced them into the mountains and wouldn't let them settle in the plains. Judges 1, verse 34. I'm kind of running all these answers together. Most likely, let me see here, of course, you're going. Why did they recognize Micah's priest? Verse 3 says they recognized his voice, and I've kind of gathered that was maybe from an accent that they. They don't ask him, where are you from? They kind of assume they knew where he was from, but rather than who brought you here and why are you here?
Yeah.
So other commentaries, I think, said they might have heard some of the bells. He might have been doing some priestly things, and they heard that. They assumed that was somebody from there. Anyway, I go with his voice, his accent. It's the last part. It's what is the request for him, the request for him to inquire of God and see about their spiritual knowledge and their and state. Well, their spiritual knowledge would be that they knew that the priest could make inquiry of God through the means of the ephod, which contained, the way I understand it, the Urim and Thummim. It was only to be worn, I think, by the high priest, if I'm not mistaken there. And all of this was counterfeit in regards to this young Levite. The Danites really didn't care. They weren't really interested in worshiping the true worship to God. They were rather interested in what God could do for them on their agenda, on their pursuits.
Yeah, very good. A lot, like you said, a lot there. Thank you. That was good. Anyone else got anything to add? Question number one. Austin?
I fully agree with Dennis's answers there. What I was interested in more so was kind of that last question there about what it says of their spiritual knowledge and state. It's interesting, like Dennis said, they knew that a priest, if somebody was a priest, then they should be able to do to inquire of God. And you kind of notice as the chapter goes on, when the spies come back, it sounds very familiar to how it was when they conquered the land the first time, when Moses and when Joshua was telling them, this is a good land, we need to go in and possess it, and God's on our side. And so it seems to me, and it still happens today, it's almost like they're familiar with the vernacular of religion, but they don't know the power or significance of it. And I'm sure we've all kind of had that moment where maybe it's a coworker or a friend or somebody that you're talking to, and they'll be, oh, blankety blank, and use the most awful language. What do you do? Oh, I'm a preacher. Oh, well, I guess, you know, I've had an experience, and I go to church a lot, and it's really changed me in ways I can't really express. So people know the vernacular of religion, and I can't help but feel like that is describing Dan. They know priests are important, that all this is good, but they don't know why.
Yeah.
Because he's entirely in the wrong spot. You know, he's not in Bethel.
Right.
So there,
Yeah, no, you're very good, very good. Anyone else? Question number one. Yeah, I wondered, I've read some talking about this priest that maybe he was somewhat famous being in the lineage of Moses, and maybe his name was thrown around and might have been known in the area. I came across that. I like especially that passage in Judges chapter 1, verse 34 that you called attention to. The Amorites forced the Danites into the mountains. And then so now we have verse 2 talks about the guys that came out. Talk about the guys that came out of these two cities right here. Five of them, men of valor. And they're going to go up to Ephraim. Anyone else on question number one? All right, let's keep moving. Let's look at question number two. Where is the city? Dakota, would you? No? Okay. Grant? Where is the city of Lesh, later known as Dan? Why do they decide to go and conquer this peaceful place and people? Why are they concerned about their ties to the Sidonians? Verses 7 through 13.
Okay, so first of all there, where's the city of Lash? It's up towards the north. It's above the Sea of Galilee, to the east side of the river that's up there. And yeah, it's a little...
Way up here, yeah. North of the Sea of Galilee. And again, these guys are starting down here.
So it's way up there. The second part there, why do they decide to go and conquer this peaceful place and people? It would be easy. If they didn't conquer the old territory because they're hard, they would be here to leave. They heard less of a fight. There was nobody else helping them out to have any resistance, so it was easy. And then the third part there, why are they concerned about their ties to the Sidonians? Sidonians, if I didn't understand correctly, are towards the east of it up there. And the Sidonians could put up a fight and could pass them over and take over mm-hmm. after they entered it and give them trouble once they mm-hmm. entered there. They were kind of concerned that might be something that would happen in the future.
Yeah, that's right. So we see the location, and that second question, why do they decide to go and conquer this peaceful place of people? I couldn't help but think of what happens today. You know, these terrorist acts are in schools, in churches. These are places where there isn't going to be resistance, and this is exactly what the Danites are doing here. Anyone else on question number two? Awesome.
Quick comment. There's a phrase that's used in the Bible sometimes where it talks about how from Dan to Beersheba, this or this was the case. And that is a geographical thing to mean from the top to the bottom. Gotcha. So Dan was the most northern, Beersheba was at the bottom.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. This Lash group, this colony, somebody I read from suggested this was like an outpost of Sidonians that were establishing an area. And according to, I think it was Kaufman, I think he was, when he said Campbell, I think he was talking about Alexander Campbell. This place up here was like an Eden, a Garden of Eden. Campbell was quoted as telling someone the water was coming out of from under every rock. There was green vegetation everywhere. Campbell described this as Scotland. And I don't know Scotland, but it must be a real green, you know, lush, a good place. So that was interesting to me. You know, way up here north of the Sea of Galilee. And then Kaufman also pointed out that the tribe of Dan is missing from the list in Rome in Revelation chapter 7. All the tribes are listed there. Dan's not listed. Instead, Levi's listed, the tribe of Levi's listed. And so Kaufman's point was maybe that was a pointing to or a result of this despicable behavior by the Danites. Anyone else on question number two?
Just a
quick
little side note. In verse 10, it mentions that they use the phrase that God has given this to you, basically that it's just sitting there waiting for you to take it like it was divine destiny. And you see that in the conquistadors and stuff later on down the road.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of use that same thing, even though we can't really support taking over a peaceful area. It's just like,
yeah,
it's ours to take. Let's go, guys.
Yeah, God did not support this. Let's be clear.
It's interesting, the phrasing is.
Yeah, but again, as we've seen with prophets and different examples, they're going to tell the kings what the king wants to hear most all the time. If not, they get thrown into prison and other bad stuff done to them. Okay, anyone else on question number two? Let's keep moving. Question number three. Why did the spies want their brethren to consider the house of Michael? Why did they steal all the worship items? Trace, you want this?
Sure. Well, for the first part, Micah as a priest and having an actual Levite priest, he had a reputation. He was, as we discussed last time, he probably had some valuable items. He obviously had the idol and the ephod that they stole, and also the Levite. They wanted the Levite also. And why did they steal all the worship items? Well, because they were valuable. More than just, worth-wise, but they were, they were kind of a source of power. They were kind of an icon of power, I would say, to the Israelites in general.
Yeah, I looked at it kind of like, well, we'll just take all this stuff, and we have an instant worship center wherever we want to set this up. We've got all the pieces. We can have our own worship. And, oh, by the way, we've got a priest. So, yeah, I think you're right, Trace. Anything else on questions? Lauren, please.
Well, it kind of goes back to the previous question, or first question, anyway. Why did they want to consider the house of Micah? I wondered if these guys knew this priest and were kind of friends with him from before, said that. So I wondered if they encouraged their brethren to, the other Danites, to come by there so they could help out their friend, give him a promotion. And then also in that last part, why did they steal the worship items? Down in the very last verse, it says, so they set up for themselves Micah's carved image, which he made all the time in the house of God was in Shiloh. So it aided their separation in the, kind of like during the days of Jeroboam and the split kingdom, these people didn't have to travel all the way back down here.
Remind me, I think this Jonathan was from Bethlehem. I think so. Look what we got here. I hadn't thought of this before, but right here is Bethlehem, and these men were. I mean, that I don't see a distance scale, but that's probably not but a few miles. So they might have known him. Again, the accent, we don't really know for sure. I found a couple of analogies pretty interesting. In the 1990s, during the Los Angeles riots, they were burning and tearing up stuff. A reporter interviewed two guys coming out of a store that they had looted. And the first two guys cussed them out and wouldn't say anything. But the third guy said, I got some gospel CDs. I just love Jesus. And you think about that. But that's kind of what's going on here, right? These guys know a little bit about religion. They've got bits and pieces that they're trying to do, even though we're stealing this stuff over here. It's for a good cause. We're going to, that kind of comparison. So, anything else on question number three? Awesome.
It says there that there's a graven image and a molded image.
Yes, good.
So, I forget which commentator, but pointed out that it seems likely that Micah's mama has passed away and the rest of the silver has fallen to him, and he goes ahead and makes the image like she wanted.
Yeah, yeah. He had molded images, he had carved images. Mark.
Yeah, and I appreciate what everyone said. Down in verse 21, which obviously is on a different question, this speaks to your idea about starting a community worship center. I hadn't realized this, but it says in verse 21, then they turned and departed and put the little ones, the livestock, and the goods in front of them. So I initially had thought this was just 600 guys, a war thing. But this is a migration.
Yeah.
And so they're taking their children and their wives with them. And
their livestock.
Yeah, and their livestock. And they And so just to your point, as they're leaving this area, the Bible says they put him in front of them so that if Micah attacked from the back, that they wouldn't be, yep. You know, the, wouldn't be attacked. And so it's just an interesting thought that I love the idea, or I think it's true, that they saw this as we're starting a community. What better than to have our own worship center ready to be for us?
Well, and also we have the visual. These five guys came to Micah's place. We don't know what Micah's place was, but it could have been, wow, this guy, look what the Lord's doing for this guy. We need this guy's stuff, because he can do that for us when we get settled. So there might be some of that going on, too, as well. Anyone else? Question number three. No. Question number four, Lauren, if you'd like it, what do the Danites promise to the young Levite priest? Why was the priest so eager to turn his back on Micaiah?
Well, they promised him that he can be their priest. Why was he eager to turn his back on Micah? Well, number one, it might have probably saved his life. If he didn't, they were probably going to kill him. And it also, you would probably get more money being priests for a whole tribe than, or at least part of a tribe than just one guy. So probably got a pay raise in that. And it's also pride. So he could, again, be priest for this whole tribe, and not, it's not just, I'm Micah's priest,
right.
I'm priest for Dan, you know,
right.
Tribe of Dan. And again, there the in verse there we see that this lasted over generations. So it was a pride thing. It became a family pride.
Yeah, very good. Anyone else? Question number four. Yeah, I have for that second part. I'm thinking the same reasons that lure some evangelists today. That get on TV, that have the big following, that have the jet planes and super nice cars and all, money, power, prestige, influence, prideful things, really. Okay. Anything else? All right, let's look at number five. Things working nice now, Austin. Question number five. What does Micaiah do in response to their thievery? How do the Danites treat Micaiah when he catches up to them? Malin, would you like this?
That he, after I guess they go a little distance, then Micah goes after them with his neighbors, people in the household. So he kind of chases after him and starts, sounds like he's yelling at him maybe as well. Yeah, so he kind of chases after him. I guess the second part, what does he do once he catches, or what do the Danites do? They basically tell him to, don't fight back and don't argue, or what they say, don't use your voice against us. If you value your life, basically.
You want to hear my translation?
Okay.
We better not hear your voice again unless you and your household want to die.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I took verse 25.
Yeah. Very threatening.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I could. I just thought, oh boy. This verse 25, and it's almost, when they turn around and say, what ails you? It's kind of like today we'd say, what's your problem? I think. Anyone else on question number five? Anything else to add? Awesome.
We were talking earlier about like what Micah might have been like prestige-wise. He's big enough that he's able to gather a company to go after him. So he's got some people, he's got some guys, but obviously it's not enough.
Yeah, and again, I think Micaiah's been running this operation and people have been coming to his place to use his priest. Mm-hmm. So he's got people that are willing to follow him.
Yeah. Whether you want to call them disciples or what have you, could have been. But anyway, he has a company. I was just noticing verse 24 there. It says, you've taken away my gods, which I made. I remember we talked about in chapter 17 the fact that this was, that they were genuinely making these idols for the Lord God of Israel. That was their intention. They weren't going after false gods, or it didn't seem that way in the language at that time. But he clearly is describing them as gods, or lesser gods. So I don't wonder if maybe either the mindset has changed, or maybe this is indicative that this was always the mindset. And I like the translation of verse.
Yeah, I think this was always his mindset. I do. I think he had that idea that, and how sad that, I've made these idols. How sad that an Israelite, knowing how much God hates idol worship, would be willing to risk his life and confront an army of 600. We don't know how many he had, but if he had 100 or whatever, he's risking his life for gods that he made. Anyone else? Question number five. Bart.
Yeah, we talked about this would be a great sermon. There's a commentator that said, they took away his gods, but no one can take away our high priest. And then the commentator said, neither principalities nor things present or things to come or powers or height or depth or any other creature can separate us from him who lives to make intercession. So I just think that's a neat image that Micah, his gods are stolen by men.
Yeah.
And he's left hapless. But as long as we don't separate ourselves from our Father, then no one can take him or Jesus away.
That's right. Yeah, very good. Very good. Anyone else? Question number five. All right. Question number six. Logan, do you like it? What can we say about the morality of the actions of the Danites on the city of Laish? Who is Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh? Why is the history of the idolatry of the Danites recorded for us? And what spiritual lessons should we learn from it? Again, four part.
Yeah. Kind of like you said earlier in the study, it's basically terrorism. These are, defenseless people. It's not justified by God. So you can say the morality of it's pretty terrible. Just a criminal action.
Kind of like that phrase that everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Yep. That's the time. Go ahead.
And as for Jonathan, I guess it's kind of like a plot twist if you're reading this, back in the day. But it's this is revealed to be the priest. The priest we've been talking about in the last chapter. What's the history of idolatry of the Danites? Why is the history of idolatry of the Danites recorded for us? Well, it's already been mentioned. That in the book of Revelation, they're not here. They're not mentioned with the rest of the tribes. And so it's just a good account of what happens when, you stray from God's path, as is pretty much all of Judges. This is just maybe a unique case because it's talking about an entire tribe.
Yeah, that's right. Good. Very good. Thank you. Anyone else on question number six? Anything to add? Mark?
The New King James has the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, but many translations like ESV and so on have the son of Moses, right? So, and that is the preferred translation of this. And there appears to be a variant. I did a little bit of reading on this, and there's some variation in the old texts. And they think the reason some of them say Manasseh, son of Manasseh, is because, as Logan pointed out, this is supposed to be shocking to you as you're reading this, that this descendant of Moses, and we don't know exactly how far from Moses he is, probably was not the grandson of Moses, because Hebrew Ab doesn't necessarily mean the exact son. It can be a generation or two. But anyway, this Levite, Jonathan, the one that had sold himself, is a direct descendant of Moses, and that's supposed to shock the reader that Moses, the friend of God, can have a descendant who's an idolater and has sold himself into paganism. And so that's kind of the point of these verses. And I totally agree with Logan that it's a terrible thing that they've done and that they have committed idolatry. Dan is not listed, as you pointed out, in Revelation chapter 7. And I think the reason they're not is because they set up this priesthood. They set up a false priesthood and a false religion, and the tribe of Dan then is, you know, I think that is the issue in the book of Revelation. People debate about that, of course. But I think the issue in the book of Revelation is apostasy from the truth. And Dan becomes the poster child for the apostasy far away from God. And of course, that is the foundation of the Church of Christ. Let's just remind ourselves and the younger ones in the faith, why is it that we observe things the way we observe things in the Lord's church? It's because it's not our church. People establish their own churches all the time, and they do things the way they want. And there's countless churches out there where people make their own rules. We don't make the rules.
Right.
We just follow the rules. These guys are making their own rules, and God is showing us how shocking that is in his sight. And so the same principle that applied then, that it wasn't their church, it wasn't their tabernacle, it wasn't, Shiloh was not theirs. And that's found all the way throughout the Old Testament, of course, in the New Testament as well.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I appreciate that. Relating to the Moses Manasseh thing, Kaufman suggested that there was some early text where you could see Moses with a single line. You can still tell Moses, but it said Manasseh above it. I don't know. Imagine trying to come across that. And then we have, this is kind of interesting, this prophecy from Jacob when he was making his final comments to his 12 sons as he was about to die. Here's what he said to Dan. You know, a viper by the path. I mean, this is poisonous. This isn't your garter snake. This is a poisonous. So, Lauren, this is for you. And the only thing I had to add maybe was the documenting of the falling away. I mean, this is another, again, the history, as Bart pointed out. And so people in the future can see this and be able to learn from it. Yeah, and then I had another comment. Micah had a priest that could be taken away. As you said, Bart, our high priest can never be taken from us. And false religion brings no lasting good. Go ahead, Bart.
I want to put one last plug in for Samson. I'm a believer that this occurred at the end of the book of Judges, not at the beginning like a lot of people say in the commentaries. And Dan shall judge his people. Samson was a Dan. And who didn't? What tribe did not listen to their own deliverer? Dan did not, and they didn't follow Samson to destroy all the Philistines. And so, what happened after Samson died? The Philistines said, "We've had enough of this," and they started persecuting the Danites. And then the Danites had to flee north because they weren't cowards.
Yeah.
And that's so you get that two part here: Dan shall judge Samson, but Dan shall be a servant.
Yeah, good, perfect. Lauren, you had something.
Oh, so these guys, they took this area because it was easy. In the very beginning of Joshua, the Lord tells Joshua to be strong and of good courage as they go into the promised land. This didn't take faith on their part, didn't take courage on their part. They took the easy way out in this.
Yeah. And that passage in Joshua, at least the one I'm thinking of, Joshua 19, verses 40 through 48, it gives the reader the impression that they did their assignment. They did their job. They went into their area, and they took it over. But they weren't strong about it. And they let the aliens continue to creep in on them. And to Bart's point, drive them out. Anyone else? Question? Yeah, Austin.
So a couple things. For one, it talks about there's something here where basically Jonathan goes ahead and gives them almost God's blessing. He says that God is with you and go in and take this. And then they do go in and take it. So It goes to show you that, you know, even a broke clock is right twice a day, right?
Yeah.
And essentially that's what this is. But there's no guesswork when it comes to anything that God says. This was not from God at all. We've already talked about that, established that, but I think that's worthy of mention. It also talks about there that this was the case until the day of the captivity of the land. There's a couple of schools of thought on that as to whether this was the Assyrian captivity that would take place in 721 BC, or whether this was the captivity like surrounding the Philistines that we find kind of in the early part of 1 Samuel, where they steal the Ark of the Covenant and there's turmoil going on in that particular time. So some suggesting the latter, maybe the former. And I would actually lean towards the Assyrian captivity, because Jeroboam, when he becomes king, where does he set up golden calves? He sets one up in Bethel and he sets one up in Dan.
Yeah.
And as we go through the books of Kings and Chronicles, there's always a hearkening back that this king followed in the sin of Jeroboam.
Mm-hmm.
And the idolatry of the city of Dan was something that lasted well beyond this particular period of time. And maybe one of the reasons why these two chapters, 17 and 18, are here is to show where this all began.
I see.
Once the people know where it ends.
Yeah, that's a good thought. That might be it too. Neil, Grant.
That's my thought, actually. All the chaos that we see in this chapter, in 5 months, the Israelites, inherently, and the attacking the peaceful nations around them, just there's a bunch of chaos, and the priesthood itself is falling apart. It really makes you appreciate potentially what the first one says. This is the time before we had kings. This is the reason why we need a king. Just like he said, that the whole argument of this is why we need to have this set up.
Well, and if I remember right, that phrase, this was before we had kings, this was, you know, again, like you said, Grant, in those days there was no king in Israel. That phrase is repeated multiple times. And some of the scholars believe that I read from believe that that was an indication of Samuel having written this at a time when it was the honeymoon with Saul. I'd seen that in some people's writings, and that's kind of interesting to consider. Don't know. One last story. I think it was after World War I, Europe was in trouble. There were bands of traveling marauders, thieves, and they would plunder cities and charge ransom. You either give me the money or we're going to burn your city down. And so they did this with some of the monasteries. They would rob these churches, but before they left, they would make the priest write them out a letter saying that God forgave them of their sins. So, you know, here you go with some of the absurdity in how some people think about what they can do in religion, I suppose. Any final comments? Appreciate the study. Appreciate everyone's.